ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय On this 20th day of September 2011 in Los Angeles, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 12, Vritrasura's Glorious Death. Text number 16. Pashya mam nirjitam shatru vriknayuda bujam mridhe gatamanam Yata Shakti Tava Prana Jihishaya Pashyamam Nirjitam Shatru Vriknayudabujam Vridhe Gatamanam Yata Shakti Tava Prana Jihishaya Pashyamam nirjitam shatru Vriknayudabujam vidhe Gatamanam yathashakti Tava pranam jihirshaya Pashyamam nirjitam shatru Vriknayudabujam vidhe Gatamanam yathashakti Tava prana jihirshaya Pashyamam nirjitam shatru Vriknayudabujam vridhe Gatamanam yathashakti Tava prana jihirshaya Pashyamam nirjitam shatru Vriknayudabujam vridhe Gatamanam yathashakti Tava prana jihirshaya Pashyamam nirjitam shatru Vriknayudabujam vridhe Gatamanam yathashakti Tava prana jihirshaya Ladies? Pashyamam nirjitam shatru Vriknayudabujam vridhe Gatamanam yathashakti Tava prana jihirshaya Pashyamam nirjitam shatru Vriknayudabujam vridhe Gatamanam yathashakti Tava prana jihirshaya Pashya Look Mam At me Nirjitam Already defeated Shatru O enemy, Vrikna, cut off, Ayudha, my weapon, Bhujam, and my arm, Mridhe, in this fight, Gatamanam, still trying, Yathashakti, according to my ability, Tava, of you, Prana, The life, Jihirshaya, with the desire to take away. Translation, this is Vritrasura speaking to Lord Indra. Oh, my enemy, just look at me. I have already been defeated, for my weapon and arm have been cut to pieces. You have already overwhelmed me, but nonetheless, with a desire to kill you, I am trying my best to fight. I am not at all morose, even under such adverse conditions. Therefore, you should give up your moroseness and continue fighting. Purport. Vritrasura was so great and powerful that in effect he was acting as the spiritual master of Indra. Although Vritrasura was on the verge of defeat, he was not at all affected. He knew that he was going to be defeated by Indra, and he voluntarily accepted that. But since he was supposed to be Indra's enemy, he tried his best to kill Indra. Thus he performed his duty. One should perform his duty under all circumstances, even though one may know what the result will be. Om jnana timarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmiditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So before we try to say something on this verse, I just want to encourage everyone to come tonight. My dear friend and colleague Gopi Puranadana Prabhu suddenly passed away a few days ago. And so we'll have a memorial tonight at 7. Please attend. First from 7 till 8 here in the temple room. So here we see how Vritrasura and Indra are continuing their fight. And we know the backstory. This is not, there's a lot of things going on here at once. Vritrasura, although he's called an asura, a demon, he's not really a demon any more than Bali was really a demon when his real nature came out. So Vritrasura is really Chitraketu, having been cursed by Parvati because he said some slight to Lord Shiva. And in this battle, Indra is now realizes that this is not an actual demon that he's fighting here. And how he realized that by is what Vritrasura said. Vritrasura, by his words, in the last, 10 or 12 verses, he's made it very clear that he's a realized soul, that he's a pure devotee, and that he's completely indifferent to the fact that he's about to be killed. In fact, he welcomes it, because he knows that when he's killed, he's going back to Godhead. And Indra, on his side, he really is in an inferior position, because first of all, he's committed a great sin. Not only by ignoring his spiritual master, that's kind of an aparad, but when he killed the replacement, Trashta, Vishwaroop, the son of Trashta, that was like a massive offense and sin. And Vritrasura regards Vishwaroop as his brother, because Vritrasura was evoked from the fire by in a sacrifice performed by Trashta. And for whatever reason, maybe he has lost his composure, he was so angry, he's chanted a couple of syllables backwards, you remember? And instead of getting a demon who would kill Indra, he got a so-called demon who was actually a devotee inside who would be killed by Indra. So this is the inner story here. What's so fascinating about this little purport that Srila Prabhupada writes here is that, first of all, Vritrasura was unaffected. In other words, if we're in a situation, try to imagine this. You're fighting somebody, and they cut your arm off, you know, and you're bleeding profusely, and you know that you're going to be defeated. This is like a great fear and anger and depression and moroseness would come, just waves of that would come over you. You know, you think, oh, I'm finished. You know, the ordinary person. But here, Vritrasura is preaching to Indra to come into the, keep going on the fight. You know, because Indra had also experienced a few reverses. He had been knocked back, remember, and he had to drop his thunderbolt weapon. And so it's back and forth. And we find that Vritrasura is the one who's encouraging Indra to continue with the fight and to fight like a man, so to speak. So what is it about this? What comes to mind here is the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where you had great devotees such as Bhishma on the other side from the Pandavas, right? And when he was accused by Duryodhana of not fighting to his full capacity because he really had great affection for the Pandavas, that was known. Therefore, he took up his arms, and he said, well, today I will fight so enthusiastically that if Krishna doesn't break his promise and step onto the battlefield and fight, then I'm going to kill Arjun to prove that he was fighting to his full enthusiasm. And he actually did that. There's that famous scene where Krishna picked up the wheel of Arjun's broken chariot and was about to kill Bhishmadev. He remembers this scene in these wonderful prayers in the first canto, where he's remembering how he's shooting arrows at the body of Krishna. And Krishna also is taken on this role of a kshatriya. And it even says that blood is coming from there and that he's enjoying it. Krishna's enjoying this because this is his devotee and there's a chivalrous rasa there. So this is all very inconceivable. There's nothing material about any of these battles that have taken place. So Bhishma also fought. He performed his duty as a kshatriya. And when the time came for him to depart, of course he had this special power where he could leave at his will. So even though he was shot full of arrows, he still wasn't dying. You know the scene. And all the great devotees came, the sages, Krishna himself came to that scene where Bhishmadev is about to leave. And he's instructing Yudhishthir at that point on, because Yudhishthir was depressed because of all of the bloodshed, being a kind-hearted Vaishnava that he was. So, you have this culture, the Veda culture, where the performance of duty is so important. And this is what the most important lesson that I get from this purport. One should perform his duty under all circumstances, even though one may know what the result would be. In other words, Prabhupada's implying, even though the odds are stacked way against you, and it seems like you're going to fail in your effort to perform some duty. And when you think about it, this is such an important principle in devotional service. When you think about how this movement began, with Srila Prabhupada taking that duty on his head, you know, taking it into his heart to preach in English, to come to the West, against all odds. Just think, look at the material situation. Look at it from if you were a businessman, for instance, looking at the Srila Prabhupada's effort to start this enterprise, this organization, society. It was completely, no one would invest in it. You know, 69-year-old man coming at not such good health, no friends, no capital. Where are the prospects, you see? So for Prabhupada, it was do or die. In other words, he wasn't affected, probably use that word, by the practical certainty of failure. You know? Because the effort itself was a success. This is the unique principle. It's not true in the material world. The effort itself is not the success. In fact, you're insured of failure because no matter how successful you may be, say starting a business, making money, building it up, ultimately that's all taken away from you. So you end up with zero. Right? No matter how much you invest. What to speak if you actually fail in the business. So it's an assured failure. But in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti, it's assured success. Assured success. Whether externally you happen to be successful or not. Because what is it that's successful is that you're pleasing Krishna. He's pleased by your effort to do your duty in the that's been given to you by higher authorities. Ultimately by Krishna, by his representatives. That this is what you need to do now in order to please Krishna. So this is how this movement grew. Think of these artists. You know, we come into the beautiful temple like this with all this wonderful artwork. Don't take it for granted. These artists, many of them were not so proficient when they first joined. They had some propensity for drawing and painting. Go to the old Krishna book. You know, they're around, right? And look at there's over a hundred illustrations in the two-volume or three-volume set. Some of them are quite crude, isn't it? But Srila Prabhupada liked them, you know, because the effort was there, the bhakti was there, and the devotees were trying to serve Krishna with their simple efforts. And many of them persevered and they became what you see today. You know, these expert artists who can so expertly present windows to the spiritual world. So that holds true for every service that we have. That even though it seems impossible, you know, the history of book distribution, right? It's wonderful to read. The books were printed, I remember reading, because I was working on the teaching of Lord Chaitanya. That was one of the first books printed, and those little abridged Bhagavad Gitas. So Prabhupada wanted them printed, so they printed so many thousand, and they were sitting there in, you know, various, what we call go-downs, you know, little warehouses, either in the temple or near the temple. The devotees, you know, okay, what are we going to do with them? You know, a few go out, and see if you can sell them in the bookstore, okay, we'll take three, and then 3 weeks later they sold one, you know. That's not what Prabhupada wanted with book distribution. So eventually, I think it was a Bodhimanta who, you know, exchanged the Krishna book for some a gallon of gas or a few gallons of gas, you know. And suddenly, it became possible, you know, the realization, oh, we can actually person to person distribute these books. And it started very slowly. Right? A few books go out, you know, you sell five Krishna books, it's a huge victory, you know, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, you know. And then, but the effort is there, even though at the beginning it's, the fruits may be very meager. But by that effort, even though you know what the result will be, it may not be, you know, super success, but on the transcendental level, the result is success. Because you've made sincere effort. And what happens? Tesham satata yuktanam. Bhajatam priti purvakam. Tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mama piyantite. To those who are always serving me with devotion, I give the intelligence by which they come to me. So everything we do depends on intelligence. This is the first thing. You're paying attention, you're bringing to bear whatever skills you have, and intelligence, everything, whether you're putting on your dhoti or sari, or you're dressing the deities, or producing books, or distributing or building a temple. It all depends on the intelligence that you bring to bear that is controlling the mind and the senses. So Krishna gives that intelligence as a super soul. He gives more and more of it the more he sees that you're using your intelligence and your other functions in Krishna's service. So this principle now, Vritrasura, you know, this is kind of such a dramatic scene. I remember when I first read this pastime back in the 70s when the books came out. I immediately thought this would make a fantastic movie or a play, you know. You've got such twists and turns of the plot. You have great mystery. You have a conflict. You have to have a conflict in order to have a good story. Our novelist, Amala Bhakta, will tell us. And so this is, you know, such a wonderful thing. And at the same time, there are so many levels to understand it. I remember these prayers. You know, this is such a... a few verses back, one of these prayers, aham, how does it go? I was just chanting it all morning, now I forgot it. He says, when will I again become dasano dasa, a servant of your servant? Aham tare tava para kamula dasano dasa bhavitasmi buhya manaksmano asukate gunangste gunita va karma karo tukaya. So this is a perfect prayer for everyone. Now here, you know, just see the scene. There's Vritrasura lying there with one arm off or two arms off. I think it was before this, so he's bleeding. And yet he's offering these prayers, revealing his inner heart, which is another lesson that comes here, is that you cannot tell from the outside cover what someone's heart is, who they really are. This comes up in Chaitanya Leela. When Godarda went to see, Pundarivijaniti, thank you. Who was very wealthy, seemed to be very, you know, opulent and living a playboy's life, so to speak. But then as soon as he heard the wonderful verse from the 10th canto, he immediately went into ecstasy, and for hours he was displaying these ecstatic symptoms. So, you tell mostly where someone's conscience is at by hearing what they say. Prabhupada says a fool can remain unseen, understood until he speaks. So similarly, a Vaishnava really can be shown by how he speaks, and also, of course, how he acts. You can't just, you know, make a show. But that's a real revelation of the heart. What you say sincerely, and what you write, you know, and how you express your mind. And so this is what Indra is realizing now, is that this Vritrasura is not an asura at all. He's actually a great devotee. And so now he looks at his dilemma. Boy, you know, now I've offended Brihaspati. I've killed my other guru. Now I'm going to kill this great devotee. So he's really in a bind here. But he has to go through with it. This is, you know, he's also got his duty to fulfill. And then he will also experience the reactions in the next chapter. But from Vritrasa we see he's really revealing himself. And it's such a contrast. Another one of his prayers, which I once memorized, how, oh, just like a little baby bird outside the nest, or like a little calf waiting for his mother, I'm longing again to be, you know, by your side, oh my Lord, you know. So this is his real character. The external body is not at all determining of who we are. So in the same way, we all have that spiritual form, that spiritual body, that spiritual mood that we're trying to reawaken. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhika Manoi Shravanade Shuddha Chete Kadaya Yudoi. That this eternal perfection of Krishna Prema is always within us, but it's been covered since time immemorial by our involvement in the modes of nature and by our materialistic mind affected by the modes of nature. So hearing the Bhagavatam every morning, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, chanting and hearing our rounds nicely, performing all the other functions that enable us to become absorbed in hearing and chanting and purify all the senses. This is a process of awakening that original Siddhadeya, that perfect body with our original relationship with Krishna. So these kind of pastimes, the sixth canto is so rich. Every canto, you know, we have the Jamyal you heard earlier in this canto. And now this whole story of Chitraketu and the lesson that he learned, right, to become detached very harshly. Sometimes, you know, we need that. His beloved son was ripped away, you know, after a long time wanting a son. He got the son, and then he's taken away, harsha shoka. But that was good for him. That shoka, that lamentation was good because he was then receptive to the message of Narada Muni and his own son coming back and, you know, preaching to him. And that's set up this whole pastime. Remember, then he gets the mantra, he chants it, becomes realized, then he gets cursed and, you know, this whole thing is going on. And at the same time, the other lesson, larger lesson, how Indra, you know, what is Indra's, what is his mood? What is the standard of his pastime, generally speaking, is that no matter what happens, he eventually gets overwhelmed with the indriyas. It's not an accident that his name is Indra, and that the indriyas means the senses, right? And he gets a little too proud, he loses his intelligence, and he tries to annihilate Vrindavan with all the rain, right? He tries to prevent Krishna from taking the Parijata tree, and here he's, you know, insulting his guru. Because of all of the wealth and all of the power and all of the adulation, you see. So this is another very important lesson for us, is to avoid that at all costs. These are some of the weeds that can grow up in the heart, the pratishtasha, the desire for adulation, for worship. And that's why the basic principle of bhakti is to be humble. Humility. The first principle of knowledge is lack of pride. You know, amanina, manadena, right? Just the opposite of the culture we're living in. You know, this is a culture that exalts the ego. You know, someone who flaunts it, who wins some title, some, you know, athletic thing or movies or politics, whatever it is. It's the big ego, you know, that is worshipped almost. You know, this person is like a wild animal, has defeated all the others, you know. And here we live in this culture, Krishna consciousness is just the opposite. How to be humble and gentle and nonviolent and to serve, you know, and to embrace that mood of service, serving the deities, serving the guru, serving the Vaishnav, serving the Dham, service. And recently we were reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita and how it's explained there that even the expansions of Krishna, even Krishna wants to become a servant. He's seeing how Radharani is experiencing more ananda than he is. He's the object of the love and she's the reservoir of all the love. So he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to experience the service. And Advaita Acharya, who's Mahavishnu himself, he just wants to be a servant of Lord Chaitanya. You see? So service attitude is everything. That's the key. And as soon as we get that, we embrace that mood, even intellectually, and try to cultivate it, then the path of devotional service opens up. You know? But when that old mood of trying to be the master and enjoyer and proprietor comes in, then that's an impediment. That's an obstacle in devotional life. So this wonderful pastime, which is coming to an end here, of course, we'll read about Indra's reactions. But check out these prayers of Vritrasura. They're really very nice. There's four of them there that he really shows his inner mood, and they're very wonderful. You can offer them to Rukmini Dwarkadish. Aham Hare Tava Paraka Mula Dasana Dasa Bhavidasmi Bhuya Mano Mater Asukate Gunangsti Gunitava Karma Kado Tukaya. Then I will be, if I can just become again the servant of your servant. This is what, you know, this is what I'm longing for. Then my mind can meditate on your qualities. Then my voice can always chant your glories. And my body, my senses can always do your work. Perfect prayer. You know? It's ideal. Here it is, right here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of such wonderful expressions. So, do we have any comments or questions on these few points? I'll read this translation again. Oh, my enemy, just look at me. I have already been defeated, for my weapon and my arm have been cut to pieces. You have already overwhelmed me, but nonetheless, with a desire to kill you, I am trying my best to fight. I am not at all morose, even under such adverse conditions. Therefore, you should give up your moroseness and continue fighting. Subhasji.
Hedravira Prabhu, thank you for a nice class.
Hare Krishna.
You know, in this particular pastime, you know, we've heard a lot of different aspects of Vritrasura's mind, and of course now we're going to hear Lord Indra, but when he was cursed by Parvati, what does it mean? Like, did he live for like thousands of years? Because, you know, he was actually on an airplane,
right,
enjoying for thousands of years. So are we to understand that he continued enjoying for thousands of years, and then after that he took on this particular form as his demon? Or, you know, I'm just trying to...
You know, I would have to read it again. My impression always was that he immediately went down, yeah, and that he was reborn.
Okay, so then if he immediately went down, which I thought was the case also, as being a pure devotee of the Lord, couldn't he have avoided this somehow? Couldn't he, by his own particular power or potency? I mean, in terms of...
I think
of,
that's mentioned there. Just like Parikkhit could have counteracted the curse, but accepted it as the will of the Lord. And this is another lesson here. You know, how are we to understand, you know, why he did this? I mean, because Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnav. You know, he's worshipable. How did it come that he would speak like that, that he would say something askance, you know? And, you know, the only explanation was that this was kind of a plan, because otherwise, you know, how are we going to get all this, you know, this pastime? But the key element for Chitraketu is that he accepted it in a good mood, right? In other words, he accepted it just as Parikkhit did. Oh, this is the will of the Lord, and now let me undergo this. Even though you can see, you know, from a material point of view, it's a tremendous amount of difficulty and suffering that he's undergoing. So, I think that, you know, that's the lesson there, is that this showed another aspect of Chitraketu's greatness as a devotee, that even though he slipped up here, and, you know, he said something he shouldn't have said, that when the reaction came, he accepted it. The other one that comes to mind is so many, Ambarish, you know. Ambarish was threatened, and he says, okay, whatever Krishna wants, you know. And that was that's part of his glory, really, is that he doesn't, he's unaffected, that he's not morose, he's not, oh my God, how could this happen to me? Whereas on the material plane, any little thing that happens, you know, probably, I was talking out, you know, like family members, they're ready to go at each other's throats, even for a few dollars of the inheritance you're cheating me out of or something, you know? Whereas devotees accept these reverses, Knowing that it's just part of the way the material energy works, that Krishna has some plan, and that I'm just continuing with my, you know, I mean, isn't that like one of the first lessons of the Bhagavad Gita? Some sukha dukkha same krit val, you know, like that. So it's a symptom of advancement when unexpected things happen and you're able to keep your equipoise. And I think that's what we have it.
Yeah. Okay. And that, just one more aspect of that. So, like, where do you draw the line in this particular circumstance? Here we can see that Parvati, she is a great soul. I mean, you know, she's wife of Lord Shiva. And she imposed something upon this great soul. So the question would be, in terms of our execution of Krishna consciousness, where do we draw the line in terms of, like, how much of a beating can one take? In other words, verbally, mentally, emotionally. Should a devotee have that kind of mentality that, okay, I'm drawing the line here, I'm not taking any more? You know, like in the 80s, that person stuck their head out the window and said, I can't take this anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So where do you, in other words, this is a great story and I really appreciate it a lot, but I'm also thinking, well, you know, what is the
practical
instruction? Yeah, the boundaries. What are the boundaries?
Well, of course, I mean, ideally, of course, we know the ideal, but and what about us? But we need to work on. I mean, in an ashram situation or any kind of temple community, there are going to be some conflicts. There are going to be some rough spots. So the key is, how do we react when they come our way? That's what you're talking about. So it's very important to understand also who are you confronted with here, you know? Is this someone who is my peer on a level of age, say, you know? We should be more tolerant, for instance, if someone older, especially older in the sense of being a senior devotee, speaks askance at us or does something like that. I remember this talk by Vishnu Jan Maharaj. There's I was going through, there's some recordings of his. And one of the things he was saying in his talk, his lecture, and it was right here, I think, or maybe next door in the old temple, because there's all these new devotees coming, you know. And he's saying that even if one of these older devotees gives you an instruction in a kind of a harsh way, you should tolerate that, you know, and try to follow the instruction, because this is how the knowledge is coming down. So clearly the fact that he had to say that means that this may have been a problem, right? that you know, devotees come off the street and before you know it, everyone's giving their instructions and it's difficult to accept. So this is where, and this may sound off the subject, but I think it's right on the subject, where kirtan is so important. We're getting together, which was, and chanting together morning and evening and on Harinam if possible, maximizing that. Because in a kirtan, if everyone is actually, taking full part in it, so many interpersonal, you know, wrinkles can disappear. Because of the power of the holy name itself, and also because you see each other differently, you know. Oh, this isn't the person who just got on my case for, you know, not getting up in the morning. This is a wonderful Vaishnav who is leading this kirtan, all this bliss and everything. And even not, it may not even be a conscious thought, but it is the lubrication for any kind of an environment like this. Otherwise, various kinds of materialistic views of others can come up. So all I can say about that is that, of course, there's a line that you know, if someone is attacking us or something like that. But we should try to be tolerant, and if necessary, you know, invoke a higher authority who can help to smooth things out. But it is a real test, and it is part of what it means to be in a community, is that we learn to tolerate the little things that happen and go on with our Krishna consciousness. Because that's the bottom line, you know. Because the alternative is to leave, but then you're gonna miss out on all the association, which is millions of times more important than any little difficulty that may occur between you. And as time goes on, you're learn to be inward looking. Someone, you know, who is relishing Krishna consciousness can tolerate so many things and it doesn't affect them. You know, you get the higher taste. Arshita Prabhu?
Prabhu, thank you for a wonderful class.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada, as usual, set the example of how to fight on this principle of duty in the face of reverses. The Juhu situation. It was so heavy that even the devotees wanted to give up. They were wondering, why is Prabhupada carrying on with this fight? Why don't just move somewhere else? Because it was a rat-infested, mosquito-infested piece of land with just a little shack on it. And this Mr. Nair was obviously not going to give up. So why don't we just, you know, give in and go somewhere else? But Prabhupada said, no. The principle is, this belongs to Krishna. And when Krishna's involved, you fight for Krishna. Even in, like he said in his purport, even if it seems that you're going to lose.
Right.
You have to fight on that duty, that principle of protecting Krishna and Krishna's property. So he would not give up. And eventually, of course, you know, Mr. Nair died and the whole thing turned our way.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada set the example that he's not fighting for himself. We're not fighting for our honor, our pride, whatever. We're fighting for Krishna. When you're put in that situation, you have to go ahead, even if it seems that you're going to lose, like Richard was saying today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good example. There's so many in which the odds seem totally stacked against. But the principle of struggling. And sometimes these things, you know, you fail and you live to fight another day. So many things, you know, we don't remember how Prabhupada, but I remember in 1974, I think it was. Omkar, you were there in Brooklyn. You remember we had the In God We Trust party? The political thing. Jagannath Sudha, you know, we were running for office. That was my first editing job. There was something called the New Harmonist we had for a few editions, you know. And, okay, you know, Prabhupada wants it, we're going to run for office, you know. And then I think Amarendra, I think, was running, Balavanta. So there's a whole thing going on. So that was something, you know, Prabhupada wanted it. Okay, we're going to try to do it. It seems like a long shot, you know, how we're going to win, but let's go for it, you know. Well, what happened anyway was that they really got into it, I think in Atlanta or somewhere, and the whole temple was involved. You know, a political campaign involves a lot of, in those days anyway, stuffing a lot of envelopes, canvassing, doing this. And when Prabhupada learned that everybody was involved in this, he said, okay, cool it out. So he nipped it. But there were many things like that, you know, that we tried, and then Prabhupada himself would change course. You know, just having our own press. I mean, I remember in Brooklyn, we had their own press, literally, with all the ink and everything, you know. But then at a certain point, it became less economical to do that, and so we started printing in Dinapond and so many places. But, so you have to know when to, you know, fold and continue to fight in another way. This is the you know, also necessary. But there are certain battles that are just necessary to go on. And this one in Juhu was certainly one of them. And as you say, Prabhupada was doing it for Krishna. Krishna had come there, and Prabhupada said it would be a great loss or a great defeat if he came and we had forced to let him move. So at all costs, they tried to keep him there. Do the comment, Prabhu?
Well, there's the example of Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna wanted to tolerate all the offenses of the Duryodhana and the Kurus. Yeah, he was going to tolerate. Yeah, what?
Well, I don't know if that's toleration. I mean, he wanted to leave. I mean, you mean leave the battlefield? But the point.
No, but he was going to tolerate all their insults, their attacks. You know, why should I fight against them? I don't want anything.
Well, yeah, I mean that, but what the question was.
But Krishna, his question was, how tolerant, you know, should you be? Right?
That's right. So it's a question of the context.
Yeah.
In other words,
so
Krishna didn't want him to tolerate. He wanted to get angry.
Yeah.
But the general principle is that, the real principle is that you don't offend anybody and you feel like you can't be offended. You know, that's the highest principle. It's very hard to feel that no one can offend you. But the great devotees, they don't take offense. But all the others who see that, they get upset at the great devotees being offended. So Krishna wanted the fight to go on, so that's the difference. That's the difference. But in general, Krishna wants us to tolerate slights that may occur. How many times did he say? I mean, I remember this you know, because this editing thing, a lot of it goes back to that. There's this one purport in the Majjhalila in the chapters describing Rupa Goswami's teaching to Rupa Goswami. And there's so much there about association. Because how are you going to water that Bhakti Lata? Right? The Bhakti Lata bij is planted, the seed, and then you have to water it by hearing and chanting. Well, amongst devotees. So it's so important to stay amongst devotees. Sangha. Sadhu Sangha. So Prabhupada is talking about the importance of staying in the association of devotees. And at that time it meant staying in International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So he says there, even if one thinks there's no pure devotees in the movement. In other words, you look around and you say, oh, look at all these neophytes. I'm going to, you know, Radhakund or whatever. He says, no. Don't do that. He says, one should still stick to the society. And if it's very difficult, then come travel with me. Basically saying you can travel with the spiritual master. Come and associate. But the point is that, for the pushing on of the movement and for our own, spiritual life, it's so important to stay within the community of devotees. And not think that, oh, I can't tolerate this anymore. This is a major hurdle one has to undergo in order to advance, is to overcome the mind's demands, you know, to be intolerant and to go it alone. You can't go it alone. There's no way. Someone else said something?
In regards to tolerance, since we know that the Brahmanas had many qualities, and one of them is tolerance. Uh-huh. And a pastime came from, someone told me this pastime from Lord Ramachandra's, you know, life. That one time a Brahmana was walking and he was in rush, like a little bit, I guess, passionate. A dog was there in the street. He beat him up.
Get him out of the way.
Yeah, get him out of the way. The dog complained, came to see the king in Ram. And then he says, who's there? Oh, it's a dog. A dog. Let him in. He came in. He said, what happened? What's your complaint? Oh, a Brahmana that's supposed to be tolerant. He beat me up. And he says, well, what do you want? The story is a little bit long. I'm just making it short. What do you want? And then he asked the ministers, what should we do? The pandits. And they were trying to figure out different things, but they cannot do anything to punish a Brahmana because he's a Brahmana. Then later on, he said, well, ask the dog. He said, what would you like him to do to rectify the situation? He says, well, in my past life, I was a president, like a temple president of a mandir, a temple. He said, what do you want? He said, make him a temple president. So the story is that it's a very difficult situation and every little thing has to be dealt accordingly. It's not a general rule, but there's going to be ups and downs, but definitely the bottom of the rule is Trinara Pisuni Chena. And I guess that's, you know, that's, I just thought I would mention that.
I'll just mention, you know, one other example because this comes to mind. Gopi Puranadana Prabhu. The history of BBT is that we had a huge Sanskrit department. He was living right over there in Sura's office, mostly. And, you know, six or eight guys. And it was very difficult to be a Sanskrit editor. Because, first of all, there was a lot to do in the big push when, you know, books are coming out and we had that backlog. We had the 17 books in 2 months and so forth. But then at a certain point, there's not all that much to do. Because, you know, the books coming out slower, you know. And so the tendency is to get into all kinds of literatures and read things that only you can read. In those days, there weren't so many translations. And in doing that, anyway, the bottom line was that almost all of them, you know, got off away from this strict line of Srila Prabhupada. They didn't, you know, become usually fallen, but they weren't part of the, contributing so much to ISKCON. But Gopi Puranadana, he was so much sold out to Prabhupada. He was so much devoted to Prabhupada that he avoided that. He didn't actually become part of this party. When this was going on, he saw the danger, even though he was really good at Sanskrit, and he went off to preach. He actually went off with Trivikram Maharaj to preach in South Korea. he told me that he had ruined the preaching in South Korea for many generations. And the way, joking, but actually what they did is they printed up something. They thought this would be a good idea. Prabhupada was giving lectures on these philosophers. So one of the philosophers was Karl Marx. And he was telling how this is the real communism. You know, this is spiritual communism. So they printed that up. I think they got it translated. They were starting to distribute that in Korea. And that was they immediately jumped on him and said, oh, because you guys must be communists. You know, they didn't find all the fine variations. Anyway, he had to leave there. But the point I'm making is that Gopi Puranadana Babu, he stayed with, his service. Eventually he became the main Sanskrit editor. Tremendous effort, which we can talk about tonight, about putting, completing Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. I mean, Vijay was there in Miami. And Gopi did, the yeoman work, translating the whole thing, translating the commentaries of the acharyas, and so many things. And there were all kinds of different cross currents and things that were, problems. But he stayed with that, and because the mission was so important to complete that book. And you see the great devotees, in this movement who have been doing their service, and sometimes quietly. Some pujari somewhere who's for 35 years has been making the milk sweets and serving the deities. This is pleasing to Krishna. This is what happens, whether it's book distribution or this or that, to stay with it and get situated. Yes, Savasti? That's a great idea. Yeah, perfect. If there's an argument developing, then find a way to serve the devotee or glorify the devotee. That's another way that it just cuts out the enmity or the ill will that may be growing.